and welcome to the Cracking Cybersecurity Podcast. I'm Anna, editor at TICE, and we are dedicating this week's podcast to the launch of the London Office for Rapid Cybersecurity Advancement, otherwise known as LORCA. The Centre for Cyber Innovation was officially opened last week by Matt Hancock, Secretary of State for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport. I got to meet the first LORCA cohort of UK-based cybersecurity businesses at the launch at the Here East Digital and Creative Campus, which was, of course, the media centre for the 2012 Olympic Games. On this podcast, we'll be hearing from two of the startups included in the first cohort, BeSecure, which specialises in using biometric heartbeat as an authentication solution, and ZoneFox, an insider threat detection solution. I'll be back at the end of the podcast for a cyber tip of the week. But first, here is the chair of LORCA's Industry Advisory Board, Robert Hannigan, former head of GCHQ, who begins by responding to my question on what he considers is the greatest threat to the UK's security now.
I think the greatest threat to our economic prosperity is the cyber threat, which comes in all sorts of forms. The overwhelming bulk of the threat is crime, so organised cyber crime. That's what will affect most individuals and most companies here and across the world. At the high end, of course, there are nation states behaving badly, and we read a lot about those in the press, but we shouldn't take our eye off the volume of this, which is still crime.
So, Tommy, it's been rumoured that Theresa May has downgraded the UK as a superior military nation because of the greater threat to cybersecurity. Did you agree with that?
I don't know whether that's true. Whether she has done that. I think they're two separate things. Everybody agrees that cyber is a big threat and we need to spend more on it. So I think I'd agree with that. What the future of the more conventional forces is, I'm certainly not an expert on. It's hard for me to say what the trade-off between the two is. I don't know.
Knowing what we know now about the internet, do you regret that it even exists?
No, absolutely not. It's a net benefit for humanity and for progress in all sorts of areas, from healthcare to education and all the things we care about. So, no, absolutely, it's been a fantastic thing. The problem is it wasn't really invented with security in mind. And we are trying to sort of retrofit security onto it. And that will take a long time.
And, of course, the challenges with cybersecurity is that the difficulty in attribution, the lack of protocols in the fifth domain. What do the protocols, in your mind, what should they look like?
Well, there have been lots of attempts to draw up rules of the road, cyber norms. They're called all sorts of things, and various bodies have tried to come up with a list. They're all sensible. They're all about stopping bad behavior. The difficulty is it's very hard to see how you police them, because attribution is not impossible but difficult to do to a standard that you could do with, say, arms control. So I think it will take quite a while before we can reach the position that we are in with arms control, so verified, trusted rules that everybody sticks to.
Is there one particular rule? What's the first rule that you think you'd like to see in place?
I think an agreement not to do destructive things that will lead to harm or loss of life. And that sounds rather basic, but it's quite important if people are interfering with industrial control or healthcare or whatever. So some norms around what people are prepared to do destructively would be a good starting point.
There has been talk of the need for a digital Geneva Convention. It brings up challenges, but how would this look like if there were to be one?
Well, Brad Smith of Microsoft has set that out, and more recently the Tech Accord, led by Microsoft and some of the other big companies, has sort of distilled his ideas into a smaller list. I think it's quite a good list. Some of it's about supply chain and how you protect the integrity of the IT supply chain from interference. That's all quite sensible. I mean, Geneva Convention is probably not quite the right word for it, because, of course, the Geneva Convention and most other international law applies in cyberspace. So it's not as if it doesn't. It's just harder to apply because it's harder to know what people are doing. So I wouldn't want to give the impression that it is lawless. It shouldn't be lawless already. But the difficulty is, how do you know what laws people are breaking? So I think it's... I like Brad Smith's ideas, and they need some work if they're to be made really practicable. But I think it's great that industry has got involved, because what makes this so different from other areas is that governments don't own this space. You know, the internet is not owned or run by governments, which is a good thing, actually. But it's essentially owned and run by a mixture of industry and some bits of academia and some bits of government. So it's multi-stakeholder.
And is there a role for the individual in that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the individual has a huge stake in this. It's quite hard, though, for the individual to feel that they have any kind of power. I suspect what GDPR will do is change that equation a bit by giving people ownership of their data, effectively, because the whole internet economy runs on a particular business model of monetizing data, really. That's why it's all free. So the move to give people back their data, in a sense, control of it, will, I think, in the longer term, have a good effect.
And in your opinion, what's the key to building a safer cyber world?
I think there are two keys. One is doing some of the technical things at a national and international level to raise the baseline of security. So putting right some of the infrastructure problems in the internet. The other is changing people's behavior. So most cybersecurity problems boil down to mistakes people make, poor behavior. If you could put the culture right in many companies, you wouldn't have much of a problem left. And that's much easier said than done. It's hard to do. We all make mistakes and do silly things, and it is hard to put that right. There's no magic technical solution. But if you could get those two things together, if you could raise the baseline of security, and if you could start to change people's awareness and behavior, you'd be a long way to massively improving, anyway, our cybersecurity.
And do you miss GCHQ?
I miss the people and the technology. I don't miss the 24-hour operational tempo. It's really nice to be away from that, and I'm very happy that other people are doing it. And I don't miss the sort of the government Whitehall thing. I was in it, in 20 years was enough, probably. I'm thoroughly enjoying the private sector. It's good fun. It's different, different motivations, and some great people. So,
because you'll be working with Lorca.
Yes, which is nice, because so that's my sort of one of my. I do some work for the MOD, so I have a couple of feet back in government, just to keep in touch, really, and so certainly to help out where I can. But it's nice to be doing a bit of both, really.
And what are you hoping to see from this innovation centre?
I'd like to see the UK's reputation for cybersecurity generally, which is high, reflected in a really booming cybersecurity sector and export market. So we have. I would like to see in 5 years the UK famous for producing really dynamic startup companies with solutions that people want to buy. And that they're being exported all over the world. That would be great.
Thanks to Robert. And now, here is Alan Foreman, CEO of BeSecure.
BeSecure is a biometric technology company that uses your heartbeat to uniquely identify everyone in the world.
So do you have a background in health?
Yeah, I do indeed. For 20 years, I ran health practice for a large IT company called Accenture. And when I came out of there 3 years ago, I took on this opportunity. It's got opportunities for the world. It's authentication, it's health and wellness. So just by the very clothes you're wearing or the steering wheel you're holding, we can identify people, but we can also live in real time say how well they are.
Now, of course, with this sort of identification, there are a few ethical questions that come to mind. Have you faced those questions from other people and maybe the psychological impasse that this brings up?
Yeah, the privacy issue for biometrics is huge. Apple did us a great favor 4 years ago when they introduced the iPhone 6 and brought fingerprint to the public market. Before then, biometrics were out there, but nobody really wanted to use them. Now everyone is trying to use them with the proliferation of apps and data and devices. It's pretty inconvenient to have to type in a PIN and password every time. So biometrics are there to take over on that. And what we have is just simply the next generation of biometrics from those traditional ones that are out there today at our borders, on our banking apps and so on and so forth. They're out there today, but the tech world now needs the next generation, and BeSecure holds that through your heartbeat.
And at what stage is BeSecure at currently?
Yeah, so we've raised a significant amount of venture funding in the UK. We have customers all around the world in the automotive sector and in the health sector. And we're revenue generating. We have been for about 8 months now. And we're putting license agreements in place to build our algorithms, our software, into lots of other people's technologies, including clothing, wrist-worn devices, cars, you name it.
And what are the challenges you've faced so far as a startup?
Yeah, the biggest challenge is probably being within the UK. A great idea, a global idea, a global product. And the venture capital market is pretty risk averse compared to maybe Silicon Valley or Israel even in that space. So we're funded from UK VCs today, and we wish to continue to be so. But that's why this organization gives us such a platform to keep here. We're getting our name out there. We want to be doing more work with customers in the UK. But for now, most of our work is in the US or in the Far East.
So maybe this is the start of doing more work in the UK. Are you hopeful?
We are very hopeful. All the talent that we gleaned our business here because of the talent that we got from several university sources.
And on that note, what sort of talent are you looking for?
Scientists in cardiology and health metrics, data analysts and engineers, electronic engineers. So our headquarters are in Belfast, Northern Ireland. We have some people in England. We have also a couple of scientists over in Toronto. But our main thing here is to stay London, Belfast, and the regions. We can grow it here. We can grow a global business here. We can take it to the world from here. There are no boundaries with a cyber business in theory. And that's what we want to do. So, you know, Lorca today gives us a massive platform to do that.
It was interesting what came up today about innovation in cybersecurity. And is that even possible? What do you reckon?
Yeah, well, we're bringing something to the world that's never been there before. And we get challenged on that. A lot of people kind of say there isn't anything new out there. What we're doing is taking something that's been known for a very long time in the health and medical sphere. Everyone's heartbeat is different. And applying it to the idea of identity and authentication. We have global patents. We've got funding. We've got a team of 20-plus people. And we're off and running, so we can bring innovation to the market. And our customers from the biggest corporations around the world are saying our stuff is cool, our stuff is next generation. So we want that platform to build upon that here in London.
And now another of Lorca's first cohort, Neil Cooper, CCO at ZoneFox.
We focus on something that not a lot of other companies do. It's all about the insider threat. So for the past 30 or 40 years, organizations have been protecting the perimeter. It's castle and moat scenario. They put a big piece of water around the castle to stop people getting in. But what happens if you've got someone bad on the inside or someone that does something accidental on the inside? So that's where we focus. We focus on what your employees and what your partners and your contractors are doing inside the house. Are they accidentally exfiltrating data? Are they deliberately exfiltrating data? And the example there would be the news story last week. Elon Musk of Tesla is going out to prosecute one of his employees because they've deliberately exfiltrated data that will damage the company brand and damage the company value.
So I presume there's a bit of psychology that comes into this as well as security.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of companies don't tell their employees they've been monitored, and it's usually part of the standard HR guidelines. But the psychology is such that regardless of what people think, they will generally act in a very different way when the scenario changes. An example of that may be if someone, and typically in sales, is about to leave an organization, their behavior changes drastically. They may not.
How so?
Well, they'll not be as diligent on security. They may be at risk. They may not do anything deliberately, but they'll not be as diligent as they would be because effectively they know their future doesn't lie with that company. And then you may have the insider threat of someone stealing customer lists or intellectual property or company secrets or trade secrets.
And so what brought you to the insider threat?
It's very different. I've been in cybersecurity for about 25 years with a lot of large companies. And for me, the decision to come here was not one of financial stability. That would go the other way. For me, it was all about this is very different in the market. And ZoneFox have got something pretty unique. And that's backed up by the fact we haven't yet lost a customer. And we're delighted that we're growing that to the tune of about 3 or 4 new customers every month.
And how has the space changed since you began?
The space is changing, not as quickly as I would like, but we've effectively now got a situation where insider threat has been recognised in large organisations. A year ago, that wasn't the case. But if I give you an example of a couple of large banks that we're working at the moment, they have job titles within their workforce of head of insider threat. So large companies are really starting to take this seriously. And I think it'll be another 12 months before it really starts to gain some gravitas.
Thanks to all our speakers. More of the interviews from Lorca's first cohort will be available soon. And now, time for our cyber tip of the week. Take care with out-of-office responses. Don't give too much information away. Remember, the more information you reveal about yourself, the more hackers can and will use it against you. That's all we have time for, unfortunately, this week. If you liked what you heard, please do rate, review, and share our podcast. It helps us gain visibility to be found by other cybersecurity enthusiasts. Until next time, goodbye.